Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So as we've been hearing, there are even more people now, seven more, caught up in a federal investigation on corruption in Albany, six current state senators, and one city council member. Yesterday, a judge released the names of nine people who were secretly tape-recorded by former state senator Shirley Huntley while wearing a wire for the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office. Huntley is being sentenced today. But as the corruption investigation in the New York State Capitol gets wider and wider, it's hard to keep track of the bigger picture. More New York State lawmakers leave office in handcuffs than by losing an election, as we heard on the show earlier in the week. Joining me now is veteran Albany watcher and SUNY New Paltz professor Gerald Benjamin. He's also author of the Oxford Handbook of New York State Government and Politics, published last year. Professor Benjamin, welcome back to WNYC.
Delighted to be with you. How are you?
Good. And sorry it's under these circumstances that we speak. Yesterday, a judge ordered the release of this list of people recorded by Senator Huntley against the prosecutor's objections, by the way, saying it would hurt an ongoing investigation. In the decision, the judge wrote, to paraphrase President Harry Truman, those who cannot stand in the heat should stay out of the kitchen. Decent public servants can stand the heat. So do you think releasing this list was a good idea, even though the people on the list have not been indicted of anything?
I was going to point out that they have not been indicted, and there's a bit of a rush to judgment. And I have no objection to releasing the list. As you may know, my view is that the prosecutor's priority shouldn't always be the first consideration.
Right. And the state senators on this list, we already knew about John Sampson and Malcolm Smith, who've been charged. Then there are six sitting state senators not charged: Eric Adams of Brooklyn, Ruth Hassel Thompson of the Bronx, Jose Peralta of Queens, and Belmanette Montgomery of Brooklyn, and City Councilman Reuben Wills of Queens, plus Melvin Lowe, who is an associate of New York State Attorney General Schneiderman, and Curtis Taylor, former press advisor for Malcolm Smith. And we're told that all but one of those people is under some kind of investigation, though there have been no charges filed. And that was strangely vague. Is this a game of one of these things is not like the others? How much suspicion are we supposed to think these people are under
if their names are on the list? One gentleman, the city councilman, said that he was assured by the FBI, or through his attorney, assured that he wasn't a target of investigation.
So he's the one.
So he's the one that's not like the others.
And then State Senator Eric Adams is on the list, and he's running unopposed for Brooklyn Borough President. But according to these court filings, he's either clean or dirty, which would be a big difference. Senator Jose Peralta is running for Queens Borough President.
Right.
So where does this all leave voters? What are they supposed to think?
Well, I was going to ask you a question, Brian. How many of these seats, should they become open, would be won by a Republican?
Answer is probably zero.
Zero, right? So there's no competitive elections in these districts. There's no accountability because there's no competitive elections. And so the fundamental issues are, the forward issue is corruption, but the fundamental issues is accountability and competitiveness in the political system that would keep people, raise the cost of being corrupt and raise the risk of being corrupt. And it's simply not present.
In fact,
another issue they hear that's not being discussed, another matter is how this diminishes the possibility for the governor to assemble majorities for his agenda. He was in this great circumstance where the Republicans had no majority in the Senate, and he could do a deal with the independent Democrats who have coalesced with the Republicans and attach them to the Democratic caucus and produce things like the minimum wage. So, you know, it creates complete stasis and returns the government to its more conventional circumstance in Albany of being unable to take any action.
So let's drill down on that democracy problem. Too easy to get reelected, Lawmakers are too insulated, therefore, from competition. And then what? Makes them more free to take bribes?
Well, their risk-benefit calculus changes. You know, I think that we have to elect people with a moral compass and certain probity and a commitment to public service. There's no question about that. So, but temptation is before them, and risks seem de minimis. So, how do you ratchet up the risk? Well, the current discussion is increased penalties. That's one idea. Well, I don't think that's going to work very well in a relatively risk-free environment for people who can exercise influence. I think that essentially making the elections matter is the key locus of choice. This whole thing about investigative authority in boards of elections, I don't know how many people share my massive skepticism about that. Nobody asked the antecedent question of why we have boards of elections to begin with. Their historic capacity to do their job well is in question. And so an answer to corruption is to strengthen a dysfunctional institution rather than to reconsider how we could administer elections fairly and neutrally.
So let me invite our listeners in on this. We're getting comments on our comments page, and people have been hearing this on the station and elsewhere for the last couple of days. And I'm sure New Yorkers everywhere are outraged and confused because, you know, as you rightly describe, there are underlying issues here that people have no idea about that help enable this corruption. So listeners, call in 212-433-WNYC. For Professor Gerald Benjamin from SUNY New Paltz, 212-433-9692 for this long-term Albany watcher who's definitely got his finger on the pulse of some of the root causes of what's going on in Albany right now. And on our comments page, Professor George from Brooklyn asked straight out, what role does redistricting play in state politics?
It's fundamental, and we have this phony amendment that's put forward to allegedly fix it, which is a classic example of the political establishment capturing and redirecting reform. So, yes, neutral districting is possible. It's been achieved in other places. It's been achieved in New York in some local areas. And we can do that and make elections. We can't make elections fully competitive because of the concentration of partisans for different parties in different parts of the state, geographic concentration. But we can make them. We can keep the self-interested parties from serving their interest in the design of their by choosing their electorate rather than having the electorate choose them.
How much do you blame Governor Cuomo for us not having more independent redistricting? You remember that former Mayor Koch, as maybe his last crusade, tried to reform that system by getting candidates in the 2010 New York State elections to take this pledge that they would support an independent redistricting process. So many of them took the pledge, and then the whole thing got dropped, including by Governor Cuomo, who may have traded it away for favors once the election was over.
Well, there are some very good people who were involved in that at Citizens Union, trying very hard to make reform and reaching what they regarded were the necessary compromises. But at the end of the day, my view is that, without going into the detail of the provision, that it leaves the final say in the hands of the legislature and doesn't achieve the goals of reform. So the governor made judgments about his priorities, what he needed to do to get some other things done, and he made some choices. But the constituency for government reform rises in these moments of crisis.
The public suddenly paying attention.
Right. Usually, the constituency for government reform is near zero, and other priorities rise. Campaign finance reform is a fundamental element of this. There's been being a major push forward on campaign finance reform. Public financing in part combined with a focus on small contributions. And, people say, well, it's not the direct, it's not a substantial element of the immediate problem, of the immediate corrupt instances of corruption or alleged corruption. But making elections fair and competitive through various steps, redistricting, campaign finance reform being two principal ones, is, I think, a fundamental intervention that can help us get us back on track.
Let's take some calls. Ishmael in St. Albans, Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Ishmael.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Good. I ran for city council twice as a Republican in the area, in St. Albans. And basically what we're facing is people are so close-minded regarding the two-party system and the Republicans. So it's very difficult for good ideas to get focused and vented out there because people have voted straight Democrat. And as a result, they don't have the representation. I don't get the representation that they would normally get if they just listen to the issues, see the things that will help them. I ran, like I said, twice, and the issue that I ran on, there's still focus economic development, infrastructure, and we're still facing those issues.
But what do you think it said? I mean, you ran as a Republican. You just mentioned a couple of things you ran on. I don't know what other ideas you ran on. But it's very hard for a Republican to be trusted in Queens. No Republican is getting elected from Queens, just like no Democrat is going to get elected from, you know, the first district in South Carolina, almost no matter what. So does that mean it's a matter of corrupt interest or that the population happens to be very pro-Democrat?
The population, I mean, the Republicans, no, they're not doing themselves any good. But I ran with when Giuliani ran and Bloomberg. So the Republican Party was not really polarized as much as it is now.
In this area. So, Professor Benjamin, let me ask you that same question, because you started out by asking me, how many of these people, these Democrats, do you think, you know, how many of those, if they're replaced, how many Republicans will be elected? But if you're talking about New York City, on any level, they're not going to elect Republicans. So is that really the issue?
In fact, there are Republicans elected in Queens, one of whom was recently indicted.
In a few conservative districts.
Right. So, but the point is this, that if you look at, so take the African-American community, there's some fundamental conservative people in the African American community. They're church-going people with conservative values. They're property-owning people. They're middle-class people with strong family commitments. But the Republican Party foregoes that constituency. It doesn't compete for that constituency. And I've talked to Republican leaders about this. And in other minority communities, racial and ethnic minority communities in the city, there are ways to approach those communities and support people who, like the gentleman who was just on the line, who want to get elected. Look at the uncontested races. You can't elect anybody without contesting the race. And people do. Race is an extraordinarily defining factor in American life and politics, and is primary, and the degree to which it's primary, and people believe that that one party's inclusive of them and the other party not, they're going to stick with that party. But there are other organizing paradigms that can be used, and the Republican Party, in my lifetime, elected people from Brooklyn, elected significant numbers of people I'm an old guy, you know, but
we can look at the mayoralty too with Giuliani and Bloomberg getting elected citywide.
Those are what I call superstar elections. You know, they're not governed by.
Let me get another caller in, Mauricio in Midtown. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I just had a question. I see it kind of funny that it seems like the FBI is targeting minority Democratic politicians. Last time I've heard of a Republican being sought after in the state was Bruno.
Well, there have been Republicans indicted in the Hudson Valley, and the fact is that a lot of the people who've been indicted or under investigation were African American or Hispanic in New York City. Not all, but a lot of them. There was a white senator targeted in Brooklyn.
Well, do you think race is a factor, Professor Benjamin, in any direction here?
Well, the prosecutor,
I'm not saying necessarily
it's
race.
It's, it's inescapable that the people who have been indicted or alleged are under investigation are disproportionately minority people. Now, whether that's a question of targeting, I don't know. The prosecutor, I believe, is African. The federal prosecutor is African American in this case, if I remember correctly. So
I've also heard people speculate.
But it used to be that when the political machine in New York was Irish, it was Irish American. When the political machine in New York was WASP, during the days of the Tweed Ring, if we want to go back far enough, the targets were WASPs.
Right. That's who
was indicted. There are things to say about
the nature.
So that's
who's here.
There's a thing to say about the nature of ambition and who is attracted into public office from groups rising on the socioeconomic ladder, so to speak.
Paul in the South Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay.
Good. Quick question. What do you think the net result of all this corruption is? Because it seems like, in terms of policy specifically, because it seems like we still have a fairly innovative and creative legislature on the whole.
I'm so glad you asked this question, Paul, because I was going to ask a version of it, too. You know, New Yorkers may not be able to name their state senators, but the reputation of the Cuomo era has been that Albany is getting things done. It was only a year or so ago that we were talking about Albany as a model for Washington. Remember, on-time budgets, same-sex marriage, gun control, all these difficult policy decisions. So has the job of government actually been hampered or compromised very much by these scandals?
Well, I think in the short term, absolutely. And in the governor himself, I think, if he was candid, would say it's going to be very hard for him to achieve the rest of his agenda in the current session, given the fact that a very large proportion of the Democrat conference is at risk or under suspicion. It's hard to know how many votes there will be, and hard to mobilize those votes. Of course, you aren't removed from office until you're convicted of a felony. You know, you're not removed under indictment, but it makes it hard to focus people when they're facing these consequences of their own, really consequences of their own behavior. So in the longer term, we have the question of legitimacy. It's, you know, I'm a 45-year veteran of going into classes and talking to freshmen, if you can imagine, and it's just hard to go into a room and even with young people. Find some idealism and find some belief that we have a system that's responsive, democratic, and effective.
I want to touch on one other thing before we run out of time, because I know you wrote a column this week reminding us of Bronx Assemblyman Nelson Castro, who was indicted in 2009 and agreed to cooperate with law enforcement and wear a wire in hopes of catching certain of his colleagues. Now we have Senator Huntley doing the same thing. I guess the question is, do you think that a legislator can legitimately represent their constituents while also working for the FBI, wearing a wire, trying to catch their colleagues in crime?
Well, you know, what I wrote in that op-ed was that what was shocking to me was here was a guy who was an admitted felon, and the law enforcer said, well, let this guy get reelected several times while working with us to try to catch others. In other words, they were complicit in putting an admitted felon before the public for reelection in one of these non-competitive environments. So then our enthusiasm for prosecutors is evident in the behavior of Elliot Spitzer when he was Attorney General and Andrew Cuomo. And, you know, I'm a little worried that we will forget about Democratic and representative institutions.
And there we have to leave it. Turn to prosecutors to run things. Albany Watcher and SUNY No Pulse Professor Gerald Benjamin, thank you so much for your insights.
Great pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.